This is an ABC podcast.
So Nicki Minaj tweeted about her cousin's friend apparently getting the COVID vaccine and getting swollen testicles. It's gone viral, and now health authorities in Australia are calling her out. Hello, Avani Dias here. And on this episode of Hack, we're going to break that down, fact check it, and figure out why young men are particularly vaccine hesitant because of complete misinformation like this. And imagine if there were woolly mammoths and Tasmanian tigers or dinosaurs walking around on Earth again. It sounds very Jurassic Park, but on this podcast, we're going to meet the scientists who think that sort of thing could happen in our lifetimes. And we often hear from the environmental movement that to fight climate change, there needs to be a smooth transition from carbon-emitting jobs like mining so people aren't out of work. We're going to head to WA, which has become the first state to ban native forest logging, but workers in the industry are worried they haven't been given enough time to figure out another job.
Hack.
Pull up in a monster automobile gangster.
It's Nicki Minaj.
On Hack.
For a while now, there have been rumours that getting the COVID vaccine can cause infertility in men. And then, yeah, American rapper Nicki Minaj tweeted that her cousin's friend got the jab and his testicles became swollen. It has gone totally viral. Most people are saying it actually sounds like he has an STI. But now Australian health authorities are calling out Nicki Minaj for spreading incorrect information. It's just a very, very weird time that we're living in when this situation is happening in real life. But basically, men are more likely to face problems down there from actual coronavirus. And there's zero evidence that any of the vaccines cause these problems. So Shalala Medora has been fact-checking Nicki Minaj's tweet. And apparently she has said the word testicle a lot today.
It's just another day on the internet in 2021. Rapper Nicki Minaj is talking about some guy's giant balls on Twitter.
She said that her cousin in Trinidad, quote, won't get the vaccine because his friend got it and became impotent. His testicles became swollen. His friend was weeks away from getting married. Now that girl called off the wedding.
Okay, there is a lot to unpack here. So I've asked Dr. Sandro De Mayo, CEO of Vic Health, to help me.
There's absolutely no truth to what she's tweeted. In fact, really, it's the opposite.
Dr. De Mayo says COVID vaccines are some of the most tested and scrutinised vaccines in history.
There's really no credible evidence at all that it has any negative impact on the reproductive system or the penis or the testicles of men or of young men.
If you're a young bloke who's worried about your sexual health and fertility, you should be way more worried about the impact of COVID itself.
The disease that results from the COVID-19 virus causes inflammation in the heart and blood vessels around the body. We also know that the penis is basically just a big blood vessel.
He says COVID doesn't have to be severe to impact your performance between the sheets.
We're starting to see some early signs that erectile function may be impacted by mild and certainly moderate disease, likely due to the relationship between the virus and inflammation of the heart and muscle tissues.
And that's not even taking into account the impact of long COVID. That is, the lasting effects of the virus on some people's bodies and brains.
We know that sexual activity is closely associated with mental health. Stress, anxiety, and depression caused by the virus may impact on sexual function and, of course, more widely on mood.
So with all that in mind, has Nicki Minaj made young men more worried?
I wasn't until celebrities started posting about it and everything, but I don't believe it's true, obviously. Like, with all this health advice from the government, like, says nothing about how it affects your balls or fertility, right?
Yeah, to be honest, I didn't really consider my genitals when getting my COVID vaccine.
Most people, you know, engage in a form of motivated cognition. That is, they fold in and take on board new information that fits in with pre-existing beliefs. So they're more likely to accept information that is consistent with their worldview or values and, you know, disregard information that isn't.
Dr. Matthew Marks is a lecturer in social psychology at La Trobe University. He says there probably were a few people who were convinced by the rapper's tweet.
The fact that she's, a celebrity, you know, a very famous rapper, she would have something called the halo effect around her. She's a very likable person, I'm sure. And people may misinterpret that likability for knowledge in another domain.
Now look, Nikki might just be misinformed, but Dr. Marks is more concerned about the way full-on anti-vaxxers have started tailoring their messages.
They often use a form of rhetoric where people are asking questions and leading people to come to the same conclusions as them without offering much in the way of support or evidence or proof.
That can really appeal to people who are sus on science.
I suspect to some extent that empowers some individuals to think like they're knowledgeable and also gives them a sense of having some understanding about unique things that others may not.
It's good that these conversations are happening. It's good that I'm chatting to you right now and talking about testicles and trying to normalise those conversations, because the whole concept is that these things happen.
Hugo Tuvey is a cancer survivor and founder of health organisation 25 Stay Alive. He says the surprising thing about Nicki Minaj's tweet is that it's getting blokes to open up about the health of their junk.
For me, I had testicular cancer and I had a little frozen pea-sized lump on my right testicle, and I put that off for far too long. Unfortunately, the cancer then spread.
Talking about the underlying health conditions why Nicki's cousin's mate has giant balls can only be a good thing, because men are more reluctant to get medical help than women, especially if the problem relates to down there. It's one of the many reasons young men, in particular, are among the least likely group to get the COVID vaccine.
Young blokes especially have that she'll be right attitude, that whole, you know, I'm bulletproof, I'm invincible, you know, I'm fine. And they kind of brushed under the carpet and hope it goes away on its own.
Hugo says it's really important for men to know what their normal is, and to keep an eye out for any changes in their bodies.
Typically after a shower, get nice and steamy, get familiar with your body and just have a feel around your testicles.
Hack on Triple J.
Shalala Medora there, and as expected, getting some, interesting text. Someone says, did they inject the vaccine directly into his balls? Because that would most certainly cause adverse effects. I believe that was not the case. Would love to know your thoughts. Have you seen dodgy information promoted about COVID or the vaccine by celebrities? 0439 757 555. Does it make you feel like you should believe it? Yeah, we'd love to know your thoughts. Dr. Zach Seidler is a men's health advocate. Thanks for coming back on Hack. Zach, you've been researching how we get health information to young men. How would they be taking on the tweet that we're talking about here?
Thanks for having me, Avenue. It's great to be back. I think that hopefully the way that men are taking in this information, especially when it comes to Nicki Minaj, who I don't think her prime audience is necessarily young guys, should be that it's not getting through their defenses necessarily. I think that the fear campaigns around testicles, especially, just to bring up Shalala's favourite word, is definitely going to impact some of these young guys when they're thinking through their decision-making. And we really don't need any more crap information being thrown at us at the moment. Because, you know, as one of the doctors just said there, the halo effect, the fact that lots of these influencers are coming forward with false information just throws up more doubt in what is already a really complex decision-making process.
Yeah, and even though Nicki Minaj isn't that popular among young men, that tweet has gone so viral. Lots of people joking around, obviously, but, you know, you can imagine some people would be considering it, because this is actually a very key piece of misinformation, the idea that guys can be affected in their genitals or with fertility when it comes to the COVID vaccine, right? Where did that come from?
I think, as somebody said in response to Nicki's tweet, I left my lights on all night and my battery for some reason is flat. This idea that there is a connection between these, random anecdotal outcomes and the COVID vaccine is really, really problematic. It came out, I think, of the fact that, this type of misinformation, especially amongst anti-vaxxers, they know what buttons to press. They know exactly where those pressure points are. And for young guys, it is their junk downstairs. And so I think that has led to a really, cultivated campaign to try to bring out misinformation. But what we know, as we just heard in the package before, is that COVID is the issue here. COVID is the thing that is going to lead to erectile dysfunction, potentially, is going to potentially, you know, have impotence issues for you down the line. That's the thing you want to avoid, not the vaccine. The vaccine is the thing that is going to get you out, is going to get you sexually active again, is going to get you going to pubs and clubs and having a good time.
Totally. So in the last day or so, Australian authorities, health authorities, governments around the country have actually been calling out Nicki Minaj's tweet. Is that the best way to sort of counter the misinformation when you're trying to target young men?
I think that we need, rather than the health authorities, although they've done a pretty good job, they're pretty funny. I think that it's a good effort to try to, you know, fight fire with fire. But I do think that we need more high-profile people to be able to counteract it. You know, we've seen the vaccination campaign. We're seeing more and more people who young men actually listen to coming forward. We need more of that. We don't need fear campaigns. I don't think that they're useful. They don't speak to men. Men eat risk for breakfast. It's not of use to them to get them over the line. We need to have the footy players saying, the only way you're going to be able to come and watch us is for you to do this, and we're all doing it. We need better role modelling. There's been too many crap male role models going around at the moment, and some positive masculinity is really something that we're looking forward to.
Adrian has texted in, I got an infection in my balls that caused swelling. His swelling could relate to something else, talking about Nicki's cousin's friend. So many people around the world talking about this guy. I wonder how he's feeling about it. But Zach, you know, we spoke to you a few weeks ago when the vaccine rollout was first sort of kicking off, and you were saying that overseas young men have been the most vaccine hesitant. Is that still the case in Australia now that we are seeing a lot of uptake in at least some states?
Exactly. When I spoke to you last, you know, there was a very fair suggestion that lots of young guys compared to young women weren't able to get the vaccine yet. That has now changed, obviously, especially in New South Wales. And yet we're still seeing them lagging behind. And that's not unexpected. This type of health promotion and health-seeking behaviour is really not something that men are necessarily prone to do off their own bat. I'm really hoping that we can prove that stereotype to be wrong, and young guys can really get out there in droves and go and get, you know, the vaccine early, because it's the thing that's going to help them look after their mates and their family. And that's really what it comes down to here, is even if it's not for yourself, even if you don't see the risk here, something that's really important is making sure that we can move forward and get back to normal.
Totally. Zach, before we let you go, obviously we've still got a pretty large way to go in getting people vaccinated. Young men are a big part of that, considering they are a group that could be vaccine hesitant. What can health authorities learn from this Nicki Minaj situation going forward?
I think that we really need to have a front-facing campaign that speaks to young guys. I spoke to you, you know, months ago, and I've been speaking to government to try to get them to come out with, you know, campaigns that are built with young men in mind, that are speaking to them, that are trying to get their attitudes and their biases and their ideas around what's going to work for them. That's what we need moving forward. And hopefully young guys can talk to one another, can go out and start a WhatsApp chat group, get some banter, pressure each other into getting the vaccine so that we can all get out of this and move on.
All right, Dr. Zach Seidler, thanks so much for chatting to us about that. Chris from Brisbane texted, I had my second shot of AstraZeneca in June. My partner had her second Pfizer 3 weeks ago. Just found out she's 7 weeks pregnant and it's all looking healthy. No impact on fertility here.
Hack. Pioneering new company Colossal says they will have woolly mammoths back from the dead and roaming the earth again.
On Triple J.
You are listening to Hack on Triple J. My name is Avani Dias, and in lots of sci-fi movies, extinct animals come back to life. It's kind of exciting to watch. Now that could actually happen in our lifetimes. So the woolly mammoth went extinct about 4,000 years ago, but a US company wants to bring them back using DNA samples. But there are lots of concerns about how this will work, whether this is the right thing to do, and if that money could be better spent on protecting endangered species. And scientists have been trying to do this in Australia with the extinct Tasmanian tiger as well. Joe Lauder has this story, and just FYI, it does contain a lot of Jurassic Park references.
This is a story a lot of you already know.
Welcome to Jurassic Park.
We all know about Jurassic Park. We've all seen the movies. I think all of this has been science fiction for so long. We do have the technology, science fact now, that we can actually do these things.
That's Andrew Pask. He's a professor of biosciences at the University of Melbourne, and he's hoping to one day bring back the Tasmanian tiger, which we'll get into later. Firstly, there's the news this week that a US company called Colossal has raised $15 million to bring the woolly mammoth back from extinction. They died out about 4,000 years ago.
A woolly mammoth could roam the Earth by 2027. Geoscientist George Church and his company Colossal trying to revive the extinct creature.
It does sound like sci-fi, but it could be possible with gene editing technology. Here's how it works. First, you need to have mapped out the genome or blueprint of the extinct animal. In this case, with a woolly mammoth, they got the DNA samples from a well-preserved carcass that was stuck in the permafrost in Siberia. But Professor Pask says you can't just use that to create a living cell. So you have to edit the genome of a living cell that's similar to the extinct animal.
So in the case of the woolly mammoth, the Asian elephant is actually very closely related to the woolly mammoth. There aren't that many differences in their DNA. So that makes it a really tangible animal to try and de-extinct, because you don't have to do that many edits to turn that Asian elephant cell into what looks like a woolly mammoth genome or woolly mammoth blueprint.
Again, just like Jurassic Park.
We use the complete DNA of a frog to fill in the holes and complete the code. And now we can make a baby dinosaur.
You would never use a frog. That really irks me about Jurassic Park. Aside from that, the technology, he actually had exactly the right idea of filling the gaps with the DNA from another species.
The other challenge for this plan is that Asian elephants have much shorter pregnancies and have smaller babies than woolly mammoths. So these scientists need to create an artificial womb. So that's how it can be done. But to quote Jurassic Park again...
Yeah, but your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could, they didn't stop to think if they should.
Yeah, should we be doing this? An argument that comes up a lot is that de-extinction is very, very expensive, and that money will be better spent saving animals that are endangered but still have a shot.
As a person, it's like, wow, yeah, it would be really cool to see a woolly mammoth. But as a conservation researcher who works on resource allocation, one of the things I think about is sort of what are the trade-offs that we're making when we allocate resources towards de-extinction versus towards conservation on the ground right now.
Gwen Iacona is an assistant professor at Arizona State University, and she works in conservation decision making, which is how we best use the time and money available to save threatened species. And she says that $15 million US goes a long way in conservation.
How much is currently spent on threatened species recovery in Australia as is? And it's $92 million US dollars. So this $15 million could go a long way towards conservation of species on the ground right now. But investing in something like de-extinction could encourage people who don't care about conservation to care about something new.
As I said earlier, this is something that's pretty close to home for Andrew Pask from Melbourne University. His team's been working to map the genome of the thylacine, or the Tasmanian tiger. And unlike the woolly mammoth, its habitat is still the same as before.
It's just an absolutely iconic, fascinating marsupial species. It's incredibly unique for a marsupial in just its overall body form. It was an apex predator. There are no other marsupials like that. We think this species was incredibly important for stabilising the ecosystem, particularly in Tasmania.
On that point about conservation, Andrew reckons these technological advances could be a game changer for conservation.
So these are things we really need to start thinking about. Doing for marsupials is potentially doing gene editing, being able to biobank tissues from, you know, really vulnerable species, particularly with things like the bushfires we had. You know, these are all really valuable tools that we kind of need in our marsupial conservation toolkit, if you like. So I think, yeah, people really focus on the end goal of, you know, getting that mammoth back. But it is really about the journey, as corny as that sounds.
Another issue that comes up a lot with de-extinction is the ethical question of playing God, as some people say. This idea that humans are interfering with the natural world with gene editing and creating these weird hybrid animals from extinct species. Andrew says humans are already doing this.
We played God when we wiped them off the face of the earth and nobody stopped to go, is this the right thing? You know, should we be doing this? We should be preserving these animals. I think we play God every day in terms of habitat destruction and, you know, how we fail to care for these animals.
You're listening to Hack on Triple J. Joe Lauder with that story. So many opinions on this. Peter Newey says, all I want before I die is to see a Tasmanian tiger. Someone else, though, why would we bring back something like woolly mammoths when our environment and climate change challenges are as prevalent as they are? To what point? We can't even save the animals we have already.
WA will become the first state to ban native forest logging in our southwest.
On Triple J.
All right, a lot of towns south of Perth have been built on the timber industry. Generations of workers have been involved in logging native forests. And now they're protesting because the WA government has become the first state to ban this industry. It'll start in 2024. And while conservationists say this had to happen, workers in the industry say the government hasn't given them enough time to find new jobs. Are you in the logging industry or have you been fighting against it? I'd love to know your thoughts on this. 1300 055 36. Zoe Keenan reports from Manjimup in the southwest of WA.
Oh, it's a part of our DNA. My family's DNA, a lot of the local families down here.
That's Mitch DeCampo. He's 23. His family's been transporting native timber in the southwest of WA for 40 years. So, yeah, last week when the WA government said they'd be banning all native timber logging by 2024, to say he was pissed off would be an understatement.
It's heartbreaking for me, and it's heartbreaking for me to see so many families affected and young children affected and parents, and it's just, I'm just beside myself, basically, yeah.
But the Premier, Mark McGowan, reckons it'll help stop climate change, it'll protect the forests and the creatures that live in them for future generations.
There's around 400,000 hectares of state forests scheduled for logging under the Forest Management Plan. So what we're going to do is we're going to stop that. We're going to stop logging in our native forests.
So basically, if you're in the forestry industry in WA, you won't be logging any native trees after 2024. But if you're in the mining industry and you need to, say, clear some native trees for approved mining operations, you can still do that. The government's planning on spending $350 million on new pine plantations to replace the native timber, and so people working in the industry can keep their jobs. They'll also be forking out $50 million to help people who work in the industry. But it's fair to say the announcement came as a huge shock.
It is a stupid, ill-conceived decision, so it should be overturned.
That's Melissa Haslam from the Forest Industries Federation in WA.
I just need to make sure people are looked after because there are family and businesses that are going to be really hurting. I mean, there are people who have sunk their life savings into these businesses, and I need to make sure they're looked after. This is not right.
And Mitch backs that.
We have to let go of truck drivers, people who have families that need to pay for their mortgages, that need to pay their taxes and everything that goes with it. So that's heartbreaking for us. And, you know, I don't know where to start with that.
And it's not just Mitch who's worried. The town his family's from, Manjimup, is protesting against the changes.
It's a disgrace. And you have the right to be angry about it. How is it that a state government can make a decision to end an industry and not even speak to the people involved? It is an absolute disgrace.
Manjimup's just over 3 hours south of Perth, and it was built on the timber industry. Heaps of families there have been involved for generations. and they say they were blindsided by the decision, and now they're really worried about what it means for the future of the town.
It's not just about a person losing a job, it's about whole families losing an ability to live in this town and this community that we love and that we want to stay and we want to grow. And we want our kids to be able to grow up here and have a life and have a future.
But the state's Climate Action Minister, Amber Jade Sanderson, says the benefits to the climate will be huge. She reckons native forests in the southwest are storing about 600 million tonnes of carbon dioxide. So that's about the same amount as 116 years worth of carbon emissions from every car in the state. And conservationists say a change like this needs to happen.
It's going to reduce carbon emissions significantly, and it's also going to mean that we've got far greater potential to be sequestering carbon from the atmosphere, which we all know we desperately need to be doing.
That's Jess Beckling, the director of the WA Forest Alliance. She says it's not just about climate change, it's also about protecting the ecosystem in the forests.
It's protecting habitat for countless flora and fauna species that live here and nowhere else on Earth. This is absolutely profound, and it just couldn't have come soon enough.
But for Mitch, 2 years just isn't long enough to rejig his whole business and his life.
If I could just get a direct message to Mark McGowan to say, come back to the table because you have hurt us and you have abandoned us and we need your help now more than ever.
Hack on Triple J.
That is Zoe Keenan reporting from Manjimup in the southwest of WA. Let's talk to Piers Verstigen, who's from the Conservation Council of WA. Thanks for joining us on the show. Let's start with the environmental issues. We just heard about how much we're saving in terms of carbon emissions. We've also done stories in the past about how logging exacerbated the Black Summer bushfires, for example. What are the environmental benefits of banning native logging?
Yeah, thanks, Ebony. Look, the environmental benefits are huge. And in fact, what we've seen here in Western Australia for a long time now is an increasingly long list of threatened and endangered species, wildlife that exists nowhere else on Earth, that only exists here, unique species that people love, but are being placed under really severe threat by not just the native forest logging industry, but we do have to acknowledge that's been a big contributor to the loss of habitat. What we know from our wildlife is that it needs homes and it needs food, just like people do. And when you take away those mature trees, you take away the hollows, you take away the nests, you take away the food source for so many different creatures and so many different species. And as a result, yeah, we've just had this period where we've had those wildlife have been, sure, been in systemic decline. So, you know, this is something that needs to be done to arrest that. Obviously, there's issues with climate change as well that need to be addressed. And globally, forests have to be part of the solution to climate change. We need to stop the destruction of forests globally and actually start regrowing,
okay,
both forests, native forests and plantations around the world at a rapid rate if we're actually going to get climate change under control. They're the key environmental issues that we're dealing with here.
Christian in Baxter's texted, are you kidding me? Not enough time to transition to a new job. We have been learning about the potential impacts of habitat destruction and climate change for years. Piers, keen to get your thoughts on what these workers' concerns are, because they're saying this ban came out of the blue and that 2024 by then is not enough time to transition into a new job. And that's obviously something we've heard from lots of different industries like mining and other sort of carbon emitting industries. Has WA done this too quickly?
Well, look, I come from the southwest as well. My family come from a farming background. And what I know about the southwest communities is that they are quite diversified economies. Some towns have already made an exit away from native forest logging, towns like Denmark and Pemberton. And those towns have actually thrived since then because they've built up other industries and businesses like tourism and other activities. What Mark McGowan has said, and I think is supported by the economic analysis, is that our forests are worth more standing. It means we can get more jobs from sustainable management of forests and the industries that can be built around that than the type of industries that we've had in the past, cutting down these forests, clear felling forests, often for very low value products. And
just
remember,
to jump in, sorry, Piers, I'm just keen to know though, obviously those jobs are around, but is that enough time for someone to reskill in something completely different to where they've been working their whole lives?
Well, the government has put forward a just transition package to help with that and to accelerate that. And in terms of numbers, we're not actually talking about very high numbers of people, because the vast majority of people in the timber industry already work in the plantation sector or sandalwood. So native forest logging, it's not actually huge numbers. What we know is that there's a significant increase in the number of jobs overall, okay, and the number of economic and business opportunities overall that will be available in southwest communities. And what we'd be doing is shifting away from a low-value utilisation of a resource to a much higher value and much more sustainable utilisation of the resource.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but we are going to hit the news. But I really appreciate you chatting to us and breaking down those issues. That is Piers Verstigen from the Conservation Council in WA. Thanks so much for listening to this episode. I'll catch you on the next one.